After a period of record high oil prices in 2014 and early 2015, the price of a barrel of crude crashed, beginning around the fall of 2015, and hit a new low of less than $30 a barrel in early 2016. This halted new drilling and, in turn, killed demand for Wisconsin frac sand to some extent. During 2016, industrial sand companies in Wisconsin tightened their belts, with a number of mines shutting down or idling and laying off workers. But it seems that excitement is building again in the oil and gas industry. And in Wisconsin, we're seeing frac sand companies hire back workers and ramp production back up. Today, we'll talk about it with two experts on Western Wisconsin's frac sand industry. That's this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 WHWC, Menominee Eau Claire, and 88.7 WRFW in River Falls. Also, welcome to all the folks listening online. In the studio with me is Rich Buttinger. He is the manager of operations for Fairmont Santrol. He is also the spokesman and past president for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. Rich Buttinger, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Glad to have you. Joining us by phone from Houston is Samir Nangia. He is a consultant with IHS. IHS is an energy consultant firm that offers advice to companies looking to get the oil out of the ground. Samir Nangia, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Rich.
Good to have you. Also, IHS Market, that's what it's called now. I apologize for that. Listeners, if you have a question or a comment about the industrial sand mining industry or about oil prices, let us know. 1-800-228-5615. We're basically talking about whether or not there's a recovery in the market and what that means for jobs in Wisconsin, what that means for the industry, also what it means for the state as a whole. 1-800-228-5615. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page. So I'm going to start with Samir Nangia, and I teased at the possibility that we're seeing a resurgence in the proppant market. So I guess what are you seeing that may prove me right or may prove me wrong in terms of whether there's more oil rigs going up and more demand for sand and other proppants?
Definitely, Rich. I think you know you've hit upon the right subject. We are definitely seeing horizontal rigs rig counts go up across the U.S., especially in the Permian, and this is having a positive impact on demand. And just in terms of the frac sand market specifically, what we are seeing is that each one of these new wells that is being fracked is using a lot more sand per well. So even if you go back to 2014. The average amount of sand being used per horizontal well was probably closer to 6 million pounds per well. Fast forward to today, and we are approaching 8.5-9 million pounds per well. And the outliers today use 30 million pounds to 50 million pounds of sand per well. So just a lot more. So I guess what's happening this year is that the total number of wells being fracked is going up. But along with that, the amount of sand per well is going up a lot. There's also been a change to the mix of demand. E&Ps have gone from demanding the coarser mesh sizes of sand to now demanding the finer mesh sizes of sand, and that has also created a bit of a supply-demand imbalance. And that's the reason why we are seeing new sand mines coming up, despite the fact that we actually have a lot of capacity out there.
And Rich Buttinger, I'm sorry. Samir, please finish your thought. I apologize for interrupting.
No. Back to you. Thank you.
I want to delve a little deeper into the increased well sand per well and also the differences, what drillers are finding with the fine versus the coarse. But I wanted to go to Rich Buttinger to see what's happening, you know, with regard to Fairmont Santrol or the other members of WISA. What are you hearing from your members in terms of demand?
Well, you know, the association started back in 2012. And, you know, we live and we work in a cyclical industry. And, industrial sand, it's not only frac sand, but we're also supplying foundry sands and glass sands. And so as we've seen the recent drop, it's nothing new. And a lot of the association members have continued to operate at high levels, continuing to gain market share, but also continuing to supply sands into other industries in Wisconsin. WISA, Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association, is a statewide association promoting responsible sand mining practices in the state of Wisconsin. We have seen operations come back online, not only operating members, but other members in the state, and continuing to talk about positive economic growth and development, increasing jobs. It's all great news. And also, regulations were strictly regulated, and the regulations continue to protect the environment, continue to protect communities where the sand mines are operating.
And we'll get more into the regulatory environment in Wisconsin. There are some bills that could have some or there's a study that I want to talk about relating to groundwater that's the DNR is undertaking, but we'll get to that in a bit. Samir, I wanted to go back to you, and with regard to more sand per well, you say 30 million tons is an outlier. That seems like an impossible amount of material going into what must be a huge well. But is this new? Because you've been telling me about this for a couple of years now, that the energy and production companies are using more sand per well. So when did we start seeing it, and is there any kind of a spike happening right now in terms of volume?
Right. You bring up a great question, Richard. So I think you're right. This has been going on for a while. We've been seeing E&Ps use longer and longer laterals and more sand per foot, which is what would account for the amount of sand being used per well. So, just let's say earlier, most wells were 5,000 to 6,000 feet in terms of laterals, and then they used 1,000 to 1,500 pounds per foot in terms of intensity, which meant that, you would get anywhere between 6 million pounds and 9 million pounds per well. Fast forward to today, it's common to see laterals of up to 10,000 feet, and it's also common to see sand intensity of 2,500 pounds per foot, and that equates to roughly 25 million pounds per well.
So in a nutshell, why is that more successful for folks trying to get the oil and gas out of the rock?
I guess the E&P operators have simply been changing their formula and their recipe, and they're finding that this greater sand intensity per foot, along with the longer laterals, is giving them better production. And, that's obvious from the IP rates that we're looking at. Those have just been going up over the last 2 years, particularly in places like the Permian, which is exactly where they've been using more and more proppant intensity. Now, this isn't the only reason why. They're also going to the right zones, they're also changing their formula and their recipe when it comes to the frac fluids. They're also changing how they perf the wells, also the geometry of the different wells. But definitely the greater amount of sand usage per well is a major factor in the increasing productivity per well.
And I just to remind the listeners, we're talking about the industrial sand market in Wisconsin. Western Wisconsin has a number of sand mines, and not all of that sand goes to oil wells or natural gas wells, but when prices are high, a lot of it does go there. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call, and if you like, you can post a question or comment on the Westside Facebook page as well. And we're using a lot of terms here that probably people that aren't reporting on this every day or working in the field might not know. So when you're saying, first of all, Permian, that's Texas. That's the oil basin in Texas, correct?
Correct. West Texas.
West Texas. Okay. So with these longer laterals, which is, drilling down and then taking a corner and heading 10,000 feet in one direction, are they using more proppant for is this high quality rock that has a lot of oil locked up in it, or is this lesser quality rock?
That's actually a great point that you bring up, Richard. So yes, absolutely, that the highest quality rock is the one that benefits the most from this greater usage of proppant. So we've seen this, that you know, during the downturn, the E&P companies reverted to their best rock or their core acreage, and that's where they were using a lot more sand per foot and the longer laterals in order to get the most out of it. I should really just say the best rock is the one that benefits from the greater sand intensity. I think the lateral length is more just a matter of, you know, which play you're in. So you're right that as long as we stay in the sweet spots, this proppant intensity stays high and perhaps even goes higher than the averages that we're showing. But once you start migrating out of those core areas, we could see proppant intensity normalizing some.
With regard to the number of wells, the rig count, I read somewhere that there are 300 some more rigs now at this as of 2 days ago, I think, compared to last year. But I'm wondering, how does that compare to where we were 2014 or 2013? Because I know that the oil prices were around $100 a barrel, and we were seeing oil, just in North Dakota alone, we were seeing thousands of oil wells be started, at least. So can you kind of talk, Samir, about the difference between, you know, where we were and where we are now?
Sure, absolutely. And again, you bring up another great point that I think in the year 2014, we were drilling in a lot of places, including the best rock as well as some of the marginal rock. So there were just simply a lot more horizontal wells being drilled and then fracked. Whereas now we have reverted really to the core, so we have lesser number of wells, but each one of these wells is just a lot more intense. Now, you know, speaking just in terms of numbers, we had something like 27,000 wells fracked in 2014, and our estimate for 2016 is only 10.2 million wells.
Yeah, million or thousand?
This is thousand.
Okay.
So that is in 2016 we had 10,200. Wells, and in 2017, we have an estimate of 14,000 wells.
Okay.
And this increasing productivity per well means that year over year, we are still going to see an increase in production in the U.S. despite this lower count of the total number of wells. Now, coming back to the rig count, I guess the first thing is that we're seeing a lot more drilling efficiencies out there, so we're seeing a lot more wells being drilled per rig, and that's simply just a matter of better logistics as well as better planning. And then the second thing, as I mentioned, is simply much higher productivity per well, which is why we need a lot fewer wells today than we did in 2014.
So fewer wells needed today than in 2014, but more sand going into those wells. Where does that leave demand for industrial sand as a proppant?
That's an interesting question. I was looking at exactly the same question today, and what I found was that our estimate for the total amount of frac sand used in 2014, our number was approximately 55 million short tons for 2014, and we are roughly at the same number for 2017. So even though the number of wells is down by, well, that's not exactly half, but the total number of wells fracked is down by something like 40%, it's almost entirely offset by the increasing sand usage per well.
Okay. And Rich Buttinger, I wanted to go back to you, and I know, I don't know if it was you I spoke with at Fairmont, it might have been someone else, but during the downturn, Fairmont was forced to let some workers go for a short period of time. And I remember the company saying that it was going to focus on other markets like for industrial sand, glass making, foundry, during the downturn in the oil market. Mm-hmm. So is that still the case? Have you been able to bring people back on since then? I think that has happened.
Yeah. Speaking for Fairmont, right. You know, one of the member companies of WESA, you know, Fairmont's been able to bring back probably 75% to 80% of its workforce just over the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. So as a result of the uptick in the frac sand market, but we did have quite a few employees continuing to work at the operation supplying glass sand locally in Wisconsin and also some other industrial sand products just outside of Wisconsin as well and internally. So, you know, it's nice to work in Wisconsin, supply industrial minerals and products in Wisconsin. But we all know that, you know, the demand for frac sand does create additional opportunities, for jobs in Wisconsin, and additional opportunities for business in Wisconsin.
With that, let's go to the phones. We've got a call from Willem in Colfax. Willem, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to make some comments, I know that these people are speaking for the industry, but I don't think that the residents of this area where a lot of these frac sand mines are opening and other nearby cities and the state in general, there are economic impacts that are not positive economic impacts. These large industrial sand mines, and I know that the industry has said there's always been sand mining in Wisconsin. That may well be true, but not on this scale. Not, you know, like a proposed sand mine close to where I live. And this isn't just, I was not in favor of this before it came close to my home, but 1,200 acres, that's a substantial amount of land. And during this downturn, the reclamation process has not really been carried out. New regulations have changed the regulations. It used to be zero discharge, and now they've changed that regulation. The new regulations about high-capacity wells allow more water to be taken from our shared aquifers. And, you know, these mines create exclusion zones, like for housing, tourism, other industries who don't want to be associated or in proximity to these big industrial sand mine projects. And it also, in the industry's own magazines I've read and seen where more and more, like other heavy industries, they're turning to automation. So once these irreversible changes are made and this land is then subject to the sort of cyclical nature of the industry, we could have another bust and be left with unreclaimed open sand pits. And, you know, these are things that can't be brought back. All the trees and the hills and the beauty of this land can't be restored. And this is being used for a product that most scientists in the world agree are contributing to climate change. You know, more carbon emissions. We're like squeezing the last bit of oil out of the earth. And so there are a lot of, I think, problems with this sand mining that I don't really think, other than benefiting a few landowners and investors, for the people who live here and who have to, and also for our local roads, you know, our roads are in trouble. So putting more tonnage on the roads.
Willem, I hear you loud and clear. Let me put some of this to Rich Buttinger here. And as far as the economics of it, the industrial sand mining does definitely bring jobs. The Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism back in 2012 or 2013 did an estimate, because it was growing so fast at the time that nobody really knew. But their best guess was that it was around 2,000 jobs kind of statewide, and a lot of that is focused here. But this issue comes up all the time from people that are concerned about sand mining and the negative impacts with regard to how it affects other industries. Like, you know, speaking to the exclusion zones, like what Willem was talking about,
right,
that you're not able to build a farm there or a home there. Mm-hmm. And also that there's been claims that industrial sand mining is taking workers from other industries, like truck driving or ag hauling milk, for example.
Right. Yeah, several challenges, of course. You know, when a industry is growing or a new industry comes into the communities, whether it's industrial sand mining or trucking or, say, a logistics distribution center. I mean, we've seen all kinds of industries create very similar challenges, and they're not uncommon. One of the things that I wanted to address that Willem had brought up is the regulations. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin strictly regulates non-metallic mining operations, and part of that regulation includes reclamation of the properties. So if you're seeing mines who aren't following regulations, and the DNR is a really good resource to make sure that they're aware of that, it becomes an enforcement issue. Just because a mine is experiencing an economic downturn like we have with the price of oil, or maybe it's the recession back in 2009 where glass sand and foundry sands were hit really hard. Mm-hmm. And there are mines that just supply foundry and glass sand. That's not an excuse to not comply with regulations. It becomes an enforcement question. So, the DNR does a great job with enforcement. We've seen that in the past, not only on non-metallic mining, but other industries as well for water and air. They're the delegated authority from the EPA for the Air Quality Act and the Water Quality Act. So that's their responsibility and enforcement. Is their job as well. The other issues. I mean, the 1,200 acres. It's a lot of acreage.
Does all of that go into sand mining? Is it a 1,200 acre open hole?
Right. So you have local zoning, which I think is another question that Willem brought up. Zoning of non-metallic mining, whether it's in an agricultural district or a industrial district. I mean, local communities have comprehensive plans, and they set up that very thoughtfully. Through zoning laws and zoning regulations, within their planning for economic development and land use. So the 1,200 acre mine, 600 acres, 400 acres, that's a large piece of property. Mm-hmm. But keep in mind that it's also important to understand that there's only a certain percentage of that property that's actively being mined. It's not like we come in as a mining company and say there's a 400 acre piece of property, and we have to go on all 400 acres and do something. It's usually about a 20 to 40 acre parcel within the property that moves through and mines the property and then reclaims behind it. The reclamation planning is a regulation, and there is compliance that needs to be followed. And there's also some county delegated authority when it comes to reclamation planning, so it can be incorporated in the comprehensive plan and also general land use regulations or general land use planning. So regulations are applied. Our industry is very strictly regulated, and when it becomes when an operator is not operating responsibly, then it becomes an enforcement issue.
We've seen enforcement issues or enforcement. We've seen the number of cases from the DNR that are brought to the Department of Justice decrease in terms of sand mining. I think in 2012, 2013, I was told by the agency that this is part of the growing pains of a fast-growing industry. But there were hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines levied against sand companies. Haven't really heard about any kind of problems, at least from the DNR, with regard to large fines being levied against companies. So on the one side, on one hand, person would look at that and say, well, that's good news. The companies are doing what they should. On the other hand, there's a lot of people that are concerned that the DNR has been handicapped by, a lack of staff or it's whatever. Do you think the DNR has enough staff to do the enforcement that you say is so necessary?
Yeah. I could say, without doubt, that the DNR has a tremendous presence, and actually within the last 3 years, we've actually seen the DNR coming on site and conducting spot tours and just inspections based on what they feel is the the accountability part of their administration. And we, some members, you know, we invite them with open arms, and actually we see them quite a bit coming onto our sites and doing tours and becoming more and more familiar with the challenges that we have, as well as the other social impacts that I think Willem had touched on too, and how they can get involved in those as far as knowledge and education. They're receiving information, and they're from the communities, and they're helping us. We're helping them communicate also to concerned citizens about our operations. And you know, just going back to the initial message that I had, is that, you know, this is nothing new in Wisconsin. The scale, I think, is the new part. Mm-hmm. The size of our industry presence within Wisconsin is new, as it was back in 2010, 2011. We really started to see some growth, and that's created a challenge for communities. It's created a challenge for our industry. But keeping in mind that we are strictly regulated, and we have been for many, many decades, and those regulations need to be complied with. And if not, that's where the enforcement comes in.
With that, let's take our first break. We're talking about industrial sand mining in western Wisconsin. What looks to be a resurgence, definitely is being reported as a resurgence in the demand for sand from Wisconsin. But it's a much more complicated story. To give us insight, we are speaking with Samir Nangia. He's a consultant with IHS Market. It's a consulting firm based in, or his office anyway, is in Houston, Texas. Rich Buttinger is a manager of operations for Fairmont Santral. He's with us today as a spokesman for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. If you've got a question or a comment, let us know. 1-800-228-5615. We'll be back in just one bit.
It's the River Falls Community Art Space Pickin' and Grinnin' Gala, Saturday, April 29th, beginning at 6 p.m. at River Falls Golf Club. The event includes live music, hors d'oeuvres, raffles, silent auction, and more. Details online at riverfallscab.org.
This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about industrial sand mining in western Wisconsin. After a two-year lull in demand for the market, we saw some companies lay off workers. But now, companies are hiring back. They are ramping production back up. More oil drilling down in Texas and other places in the U.S. is creating more of a demand for the sand known as Northern White from western Wisconsin. If you've got a question or comment, let us know. 1-800-228-5615. I wanted to talk a bit about, well, I guess might as well get right into the politics of politics finds its way into anything. But Samir Nangia, I wanted to go to you first. And we have a new president who has at least signaled his favor for local, U.S. energy production. President Trump has approved or basically signed off on the Keystone Pipeline, the Dakota Access Pipeline, two pipelines that definitely saw their share of controversy. So I'm wondering, do you think that the election of President Trump is helping the proppant markets in Wisconsin's industrial sand market?
Again, you bring up an excellent question. So I would say those two specific pipelines, once again, bring in oil, I guess, from Canada into
right.
the U.S.
Right.
So it doesn't specifically help the Wisconsin sand mining operations by themselves. But I think, we've seen a lot of coal-fired power generation replaced by natural gas. So that's been beneficial for domestic production, which is U.S. shale. So that's not so much a matter of policy, but more a matter of economics, that natural gas has just basically become cheap to the point where it can compete with coal or actually even beat coal just in terms of costs. And I think that's been the main thing about the U.S. shale revolution, that these operators have figured out how to operate under these low break-even costs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's no denying the fact that OPEC's decision to curtail production you know, I guess they're calling it OPEC and non-OPEC production cuts, those have definitely helped the U.S. shale industry recover some.
Sure.
Because, you know, the break-evens, as low as they are, it's very hard to function at $40 oil. And one could argue that it's the production cuts that have allowed the industry to stabilize at over $50 a barrel. And I think, you know, when you look at the forward curve right now, you're still seeing higher prices for 2017 and then 18 and 19. And that's what's giving a lot of these producers confidence in going into the market and basically investing today for a stream of oil and gas revenues that you get over the next 2 to 3 years. So I would say it's been more economics and less of the regulatory stuff. I mean, you know, actually speaking, if you opened up more federal lands and that would be more conventional oil and gas production, that would actually be a negative for the U.S. shale industry. So it's very hard to pick winners and losers as usual with policy initiatives. But I guess to his credit, at least he hasn't imposed any more restrictions on shale production.
Sure. And just the idea that the president might be friendlier towards fracking than, say, President Obama was, or than people thought that President Hillary Clinton might have been, is that just kind of a comfort but not necessarily an economic driver?
Yes, I think that's true. And also, it seems that most of the heavy lifting was left up to the states anyway. And, you know, there's a reason. I mean, you know, Texas has some great deposits, you know, in terms of shale. But along with that, we also have a pro-business government that has definitely helped the industry along. There are some states that have placed an outright ban on fracking, such as New York. Which has not allowed producers to develop their acreage over there. So, again, it's more state by state, and perhaps under President Trump, we might see the states doing even more to protect their own environment, et cetera.
Sure. Rich Budinger, any thoughts on President Trump's election in general? No, I'm just with regard to the industrial sand mining.
Yeah, I think you know, the overall philosophy that the administration has of, you know, keeping jobs, increasing jobs in the United States, I think is going to be helpful for a number of industries, and I think oil and gas at some point will benefit from that. I don't know to what extent, because we are talking about a worldwide market. So anytime that you're involved in a worldwide market, OPEC and all the geopolitical forces that are involved, you know, could have a positive or negative influence on how that's translated to, say, industrial sand and all the other support industries for oil and gas. So it's really difficult to tell. But you know, we're proud that, you know, we're producing industrial sands in Wisconsin. We're continuing to produce industrial sands for an industry that you know, continues to have an upward trend. Not only oil and gas, but also, you know, glass is doing really well in the state, and foundry sands are doing really well. That's another sign that we have a very strong economy. And so we're looking forward to continuing to supply sands, not only within Wisconsin, from Wisconsin mining operations, but across the United States and North America.
I wanted to talk real quickly about the different grades of sand that are used in the, specifically, again, speaking about the hydraulic fracturing industry. There are different grades. Wisconsin's has been held to very high esteem. The Northern White is what it's called. Good crush strength. It's a nice shape, nice and round. We've got a variety of mesh sizes coming from the state. There's also something called brown sand, Brady sand, Brady gold. And I'm wondering, Sameer Nangia, we've talked before, and there have been reports that more industry or more companies, especially in the Texas area, are using the brown sand because it comes from Texas. Can you run through that a little bit? And is that still the case? Are they choosing in the Permian brown or Brady sand versus Northern White?
Yes, that is true. But I think it has more to do just with cost rather than with anything else. So the sand from Wisconsin is of some of the highest quality, both in terms of crush strength as well as in terms of sphericity and roundness. But what a lot of people, what a lot of operators are doing is that they are using inferior quality sand, which could be from Texas or, you know, just local sand mines anywhere. We've seen a lot of local sand being used in Canada as well, simply because it is much cheaper. And then the technical community still has, well, let's put it this way. Most of the technical community believes that the greater crush strength and roundness off the Wisconsin sand makes it the superior product, but there's also a small sub-community out there saying that perhaps we don't need the highest quality sand for some of these frack jobs, and that we could just make do with fit-for-purpose sand, which is found locally in Texas. And the most recent example of that is the deposits that Hi-Crush is developing, which are within the Permian itself. And again, the big cost advantage being that if you mine it right there and sell it right there, then you don't have to pay the additional money for railing it and transporting it and handling it basically along the way.
And Rich Buttinger, I was looking at the Fairmont Santrol website, and I didn't know this, but Fairmont Santrol has a mine in Brady, Texas, where a lot of this brown sand or this Texas sand is produced, and under Fairmont Santrol calls it Brady Gold is their version. So is this where the market is heading, and is it a threat to Wisconsin's northern white sands?
Yeah, I don't believe it's a threat. I mean, you know, industrial sands are being produced northern Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, some in Missouri and Arkansas. I mean, that kind of constitutes the northern white sand deposits that we hear about that are described as the higher quality. But there's industrial sands being produced in many, many states, Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, across the U.S. And I think Shamir made the point it's a cost question. So the mines in Texas, the Brady and the Avoca area, it's not too far outside the Permian. Actually, it's in between two large shale deposits, the Eagleford, which is in southeast Texas, and then the Permian, which is out in west Texas. And so these sands have been operating and producing sand products and supplying the Permian and Eagleford and some other deposits up into Oklahoma as well. At the same time, we've been seeing northern white producing up in the northern Midwest, and also being used in the Permian right alongside the Brady and the Voca sands, the Texas Golds, the Texas Browns.
I looked at a comment section for a lot of these people that are actually, you know, the engineers, the drilling engineers, and it's all over the place. It's kind of personal preference, it almost seems like.
Yeah, and there's a lot of research and development going on out there that says dictates one way versus the other is better. And I think so as an industry, we're evolving. I mean, there's innovation involved, which is a great thing. It's a great news that, you know, as an industry, oil and gas industry, as an industry, industrial sand industry, we're evolving. And we're looking at better ways to do what we need to do to make sure we're developing and delivering a quality product to the industry. And so because of that, we're mindful of costs. Our cost per ton is decreasing, has been decreasing, where you see, you know, just as inflationary pressures, you see it maybe go the other way over time, but not so in industrial sands. We're seeing cost per tons go down with the application innovation, not only in the oil fields, but also at the sand mines in Wisconsin.
Are suppliers in Wisconsin able to try to put pressure on the rail road, you know, the different railroads, because that's what I've heard all along is that that's the biggest cost, the biggest kind of choke point. So what can be done?
So it's a supply demand for logistics. So whether it's trucking, barging, or rail, depending on where we are in the United States and how close we are to the oil basins, you may choose one over the other. And then also there may be demand for one over the other.
Sure.
We've seen, coal decline quite a bit, and therefore the railroads need to supplement that business. And so they're looking at oil as maybe one of those opportunities. But other industries such as lumber you know, car imports, that sort of thing, intermodal transportation. We've seen a lot going on. So it's a supply-demand industry, cooperation, you know, whether it's logistics and delivering sand through truck, rail, or barge. It's constantly evolving, and it's really a positive story, especially in, when you're talking about Wisconsin and the four main lines that are access Wisconsin, the Canadian National, Canadian Pacific, Union Pacific, and Burlington Northern. There's direct lines into the shale plays, just depending on which line you're on and where your mine's at. And, you know, some of the railroads, you know, are offering very, very competitive rates. And, you know, that's helping the industry as well.
Let's take our next call. And Rod's been on the line for a while. Rod, are you still there?
Yeah.
Rod and Weyerhaeuser, what's on your mind?
My question was, you know, since this all started, you know, I had heard several times different people off and on that the reclamation, when this is all done, that they were actually going to make lakes from some of these mines. And in this era of alternative facts, whatever that is, if that is true.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. Reclamation, are we seeing, are we going to see more lakes in western Wisconsin?
Well, you know, the reclamation, that, you know, that's a collaboration between the landowner. If the mine is not the landowner, there's cooperation there on what the mine is going to look like at the end of the life cycle, in the middle of the life cycle as it's active as well. Also within the local community, so the county, the townships, the villages have a opportunity to interject what they would like to see the land being used at. So that those land uses can range. And by the way, that's not a regulation. The land use is not, the end land use is not in right. The regulation, just as long as it's reclaimed to a certain standard. But it could be a lake. It could be a wildlife park. We've seen reclamation go back to agriculture. The initial use was agriculture. The mine came in and extracted the mineral and returned the land use to agriculture. We've also seen industrial parks grow and transfer onto old mine areas and reclaimed mine areas. So it's really a collaboration between the mining company and the local community and, of course, the land ownership as well.
Let's take our final break. We've got about 10 minutes left to discuss what could take hours and hours. We're talking about industrial sand mining, a rebound in the market. Sand companies in western Wisconsin are hiring folks back. They are starting to increase production. There's more oil wells being drilled. What does it mean for our region? We'll hear more about it from Rich Buttinger of the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association and Samir Nangia of IHS Market.
Every day we explore the people, places, and ideas that keep life interesting.
We create new opportunities at home, at work, and in our communities.
We connect with others who challenge and inspire us.
And we have fun because we love learning new things.
The Ideas Network.
Join us on the never-ending search for understanding.
Support for WPR comes from the University of Wisconsin Survey Center, committed to innovative data collection and research designs that advance science for the public good. Info at uwsc.wisc.edu.
You listen Saturday and Sunday mornings. Now you can experience it in person. Says You comes to Eau Claire to record two shows, May 6th at the Lismore in downtown Eau Claire. Tickets are available at wpr.org/100.
This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. We're talking about industrial sand mining, an upsurge in demand for Wisconsin sand, also sand coming from different parts of the U.S. It all has to do with, a majority of it has to do with what the price of oil is and what's happening with oil and or energy and production companies in the different shale deposits in the U.S. I'm joined by Rich Buttinger. He is a manager of operations for Fairmont Santral, which has mines in places including Menominee and Maiden Rock. He's also the spokesman for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. Samir Nangia joins us by phone. He's a consultant for IHS Market. That's a consulting firm. His office is in Houston, Texas. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We talked a little bit about regulations earlier, Rich Budinger, and I wanted to go back to that very quickly. A lot of folks that are concerned about the industry that might be opposed to the industry think that, you know, regulations are not strict enough for sand companies. But I'm wondering, we do have a bill out there that would kind of relax regulations for high-capacity wells right now. Do you see the lawmakers in Wisconsin turning a corner, trying to be more trying to reach out to the sand companies and relax restrictions?
No, I don't believe so. I think any modifications of the regulation or any new regulation, I mean, it has to be backed with facts and science. Now, whether that's being able to increase, use of a particular resource such as groundwater through high cap wells, there needs to be the facts to support that. So, you know, information is out there. We had a challenge several years ago when it came back to the crystalline silica and yes. the ambient air and
we
and
actually
dust
had a
how
we
much
had a caller
that
impacts. Was and saying just, that it's still leading to people are still saying that it's causing respiratory disease, and I know there have been some studies on this.
Right. Well, before there wasn't a lot of information, so the industry responded. And also Department of Natural Resources responded with a lot of ambient air studies on that. Now, you know, since we didn't have a lot of sand mines before, they didn't really have a whole lot of data. As the industry grew and expanded, we had a tremendous amount of operations, a tremendous amount of opportunities to collect data. And so that was a natural evolution of the facts and the science coming to the forefront of the conversation, and that's actually part of the WESA collaboration with regulators is to work on information and help understand the impacts of, say, fugitive dust, whether it is actually a concern or not. We have to produce. We can talk about that all we want, but until we produce the facts and the data, the argument is fairly irrelevant. So the same thing with any other regulation, as it's increased regulation or decreased regulation, we feel strongly as an association that there needs to be facts and science to back up those decisions.
And one thing before we switch gears here and round out the show, the DNR announced last year that it was going to be conducting a groundwater study to try to determine whether industrial sand mining is causing heavy metals that are locked up in the sandstone formations, whether the act of mining them releases that and lets the metals like aluminum leach into groundwater. Last thing I heard from the DNR was that they're scoping the process. They're trying to find partners to include in on this study. Is WESA involved in that?
Yeah. Yes, we're definitely involved in a dialogue. And that's just another example of what I brought up earlier about gathering data, gathering information. So that's a very positive dialogue about our industry and about regulations. And so that'll continue. And we're looking forward to participating in that as an association.
Do you or other members have any concerns that the act of sand mining actually is releasing heavy metals? I mean, do the companies test for this themselves? I know that there's a requirement under the new water permit to
Correct.
Test for some metals.
Yeah, under the new groundwater, I'm sorry, the new general permit.
Mm-hmm.
There's some language in there that identifies that as a point of concern and point of data collection. But you know, we're non-metallic mining in general. Is not proven to have that kind of negative impact on the groundwater. I think, one of the confusing points is that, identifying if those issues are already present on the property,
mm-hmm.
Baseline
right.
prior to activity, is very important to identify.
There have been high concentrations in wells for a long time in
correct.
Certain parts of Wisconsin.
And there hasn't been any mining going on, mm-hmm. In that area forever or for many, many, many decades. And so there was not any negative impact associated with mining. It was just already there within the environment. And so there's that kind of information out there that needs to be gathered. And I think that's the DNR and UW Eau Claire has been participating quite a bit in some data gathering as well. And it's all very, very positive. It's very positive for The environments where we operate in is very positive for Wisconsin.
And I wanted to speak quickly. I wanted to transition to Samir and talk about this. What I saw is I'm wondering if there's consolidation happening in the Wisconsin frac sand market or just the proppant market in general. A company named Mammoth Energy Services, which is based in Oklahoma City or Oklahoma, recently bought two frac sand mines, and this was these purchases were part of acquisitions worth like $160 million. So Taylor Frac, which I believe is in Jackson County, and a sand company that had gone bankrupt, Chieftain Sand, up in Barron County.
Yeah,
it's right on the border, I believe. But so is this... first of all, what do we know about this acquisition and this company, and are we going? Do you expect to see more consolidations happening in the market or in the industry?
Yes, so sure. So definitely, we do see more consolidation happening in the industry, and just it's been a much better market now for the oil field services industry in general. I think the downturn hurt these companies extremely hard. This means, you know, I'm talking about all the pressure pumpers, the frac sand companies, the companies that sell equipment to them, and so on. We saw a number of bankruptcies during the last cycle between 2014 and 2016. And Chippewa was, well, Chieftain was one of the companies that did end up filing for bankruptcy. And the reason that they had to was because they had a mostly coarse deposit. Mm-hmm. And then they also had higher costs. Because they're not directly connected to a rail line. I believe they go through the progressive rail line system. So yeah. There was some. So basically, they just had a higher cost structure. But I think given the increased demand today, it just simply does make sense for a lot of these mines to come back. And I think that's what Mammoth Energy recognized, that perhaps under the current demand and pricing outlook, that mine makes sense. But, you know, they still paid well less than replacement cost.
$35 million. I'm sorry to cut you off, Samir. That's all the time we've got for this program. Thank you both so much. Rich Buttinger, again, is a manager of operations for Fairmont Santrol. He's also a spokesman and past president for the Wisconsin Industrial Sand Association. Thank you. Samir Nangia is a consultant with IHS Market. It is a consulting firm for oil and gas drillers and others interested in investing in the market. Next week, we're going to have the outdoor guys on. We're going to talk about the spring fishing opener. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.